Okay, so we'll do 1 Samuel 17. Samuel is one of the prophets. He's a prophet who's sent to King Saul. If you know, King Saul is the first king of Israel. Obviously, God was the king of Israel before that. The Israelites said, "We want a king, we want a king, we want to be like everybody else, we want a king." And God says, "You don't know what you're asking for. What you have right now is better. What you have is God telling you what to do," which is funny because that's kind of what we want now. We're like, man, it would be great if we didn't have, you know, presidents and chancellors and Congress and all these politicians, if we just had God. But they said, no, we don't want that. We want a king like all the other nations. And God said, okay, I'll give you a king like all the other nations, and you're going to sleep in that bed. And so he gives them Saul. And King Saul is notably head and shoulders taller than any other Israelite. If you imagine this, a kingly king, think probably flowing beard, tall, muscular, you know, King Richard the Lionheart, that kind of guy. That's King Saul. He looks the part. He absolutely looks like a king. Everyone looks at him and they're like, yeah, that's a great king. He's a great, great warrior. He fulfills everything the Israelites want, but he's also kind of nuts. As things go on, he becomes less and less faithful. And he starts falling away from his duties. Now, God gives him the authority to be a king. He is the actual king of Israel, but he doesn't act out that role very well in the end. At first, he is faithful. The prophet Samuel tells him multiple times, do this or don't do that, whatever, and he listens. Then later on, he stops listening to Samuel, and eventually God stops talking to him entirely, and Samuel dies, and Saul is kind of left hanging. He's like, well, I don't know what to do. God's not telling me what to do anymore. I haven't been listening to him, but now he's not even talking to me anymore. So Saul gets into a lot of trouble doing that. He ends up going to a necromancer to call up the ghost of Samuel. He wants to talk to the ghost of Samuel because he doesn't know who else to talk to. And that's not a good thing that he does. So So that's who Saul is. Saul is the king at this point. The Israelites are fighting against various nations. I believe, who are these? They're fighting against the Philistines at this point. And this is where you're going to learn about Goliath. Now, in the previous chapter, chapter 16, 1 Samuel chapter 16, David is anointed to be the king. So he's going to be the king at some point. Just because he's anointed doesn't mean he's the king right then and there. All right. I believe he's anointed by, well, let's just read 1 Samuel chapter 16, and then we'll go forward with that. So I believe he's anointed by Samuel. So one of the roles of the prophets is to pick the king. So the king, or the prophet, is the one who talks for God. He pours the oil on the head of the guy who's supposed to be the king. So Samuel anoints Saul. Saul becomes king. And then this happens much later on. All right, chapter 16. The Lord said to Samuel, "How long will you grieve over Saul, since I have rejected him from being king over Israel?" So again, he's talking to his prophet, and he's saying, Saul has not been a good king. I told you it was going to happen, and it happened. "Fill your horn with oil and go. I will send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided for myself a king among his sons." Then Samuel said, "How can I go? If Saul hears it, he will kill me." The Lord said, "Take a heifer with you and say, I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Invite Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show you what you shall do. And you shall anoint for me him whom I declare to you." Samuel did what the Lord commanded, and they came to Bethlehem. The elders of the city came to meet him, trembling, said, "Did you come peaceably?" And he said, "Peaceably, I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Consecrate yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice." And he consecrated Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. It's interesting here. I wouldn't say necessarily that this is deception. This isn't God telling people to lie. But there is, I mean, it is deception to a degree. It's you know, Saul is going to kill us if we say that we're going to go anoint another king. So God says, okay, so don't tell him. Go and sacrifice a cow, which is what you're going to do, and say that's what you're going to do. So intentionally leave out some information. So there is some of that going on here. When they came and looked on Eliab and thought, surely, okay, so Samuel the prophet is going to the sons of, is it Jonathan? Is that Jesse? Sorry, Jonathan is his friend. Going to the sons of Jesse. And it's the same sort of thing. Remember, their first king is head and shoulders taller than everybody else. He looks like a king. So that's what they're expecting for the second king. For Samuel, he's going to anoint another king. So he's looking at, you know, maybe the oldest son. That would be the obvious choice for a king, the oldest son or the biggest guy. When he came and looked on Eliab, he thought, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look on appearance or the height of his stature, because I've rejected him. For the Lord sees not as a man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. Then Jesse called Abinadab and made him pass before Samuel. So Jesse is calling his sons and they're processing before the prophet. And he said, neither has the Lord chosen this one. Then Jesse made Shammah pass by, and he said, neither has the Lord chosen this one. And Jesse made seven of his sons pass before Samuel. And Samuel said to Jesse, the Lord has not chosen these. Then Samuel said to Jesse, are all your sons here? And he said, there remains yet the youngest. But behold, he is keeping the sheep. And Samuel said to Jesse, send and get him, for we will not sit down until he comes here. Then he sent and brought him. Now he was ruddy and had beautiful eyes and was handsome. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is he. Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers. And the spirit of the Lord rushed upon David from that day forward. And Samuel rose up and went to Ramah. This phrase, the spirit of the Lord came upon him, the spirit of the Lord rushed upon him. This means kind of God's favor is with him. So every time Samson, for example, does some feat of strength, it says the spirit of the Lord came upon him. The spirit of the Lord rushed upon him. Just to say that anything good that he does, this is God working through him. So David is the youngest and probably the smallest. He's not the runt of the litter. He's not some weakly deformed child. He's David. Apparently he's decent looking, but he's a young man. Verse 14. Now the spirit of the Lord departed from Saul. You see this contrast here. So the spirit of the Lord rushed upon David. The spirit of the Lord departed from Saul. And a harmful spirit from the Lord tormented him. And Saul's servant said to him, behold, now a harmful spirit of God is tormenting you. Let our Lord now command your servants who are before you to seek out a man who is skillful in playing the lyre. And when the harmful spirit from God is upon you, he will play it and you will be well. So Saul said to his servants, provide for me a man who can play well and bring him to me. So I'm going to pause right there. Actually, I want to see what the note says about this, about verse 14. All right. So one of the notes says that this event could have happened chronologically after David and Goliath, but it doesn't matter one way or the other. The harmful spirit, you can think about it like really terrible depression or something like that. Like he's just in anguish. Yes. How old is David? Let me see if it's got a note. I imagine he's a teenager at this point. Yeah, he's not like a 30-year-old. He's not going to be in his 30s. He's not a full-grown man, married and all this other stuff. He's a young man. He's a youth, probably. Think about a teenager, anywhere from, let's say, 13 to 16 or so. That would be my guess. So they're going with that. All right, where was I? Verse 18, one of the young men answered, behold, I have seen a son of Jesse, the Bethlehemite, who is skillful in playing, a man of valor, man of war, prudent in his speech, man of good presence, and the Lord is with him. So it's interesting. I don't know why he would call him a man of war at this point, because I don't think he would have been in battle. Let me see. Yeah, okay, so the note for this says David was not 20 years old yet. This raises a question of chronology. Yeah, so this is why we're asking the question like, wait, did this happen? Was this one of the events that happened after David and Goliath? So that's a little confusing. That happens sometimes in the Bible. All right, verse 19. Therefore, Saul sent messengers to Jesse and said, send me David, your son, who is with the sheep. And Jesse took a donkey laden with bread and a skin of wine, a young goat, and sent them by David, his son, to Saul. David came to Saul and entered his service, and Saul loved him greatly and became his armor bearer. And Saul sent to Jesse, saying, let David remain in my service, for he has found favor in my sight. And whenever the harmful spirit of God was upon Saul, David took the lyre and played it with his hand. So Saul was refreshed and was well, and the harmful spirit departed him. Again, yeah, this sounds a lot like after David and Goliath. That kind of sounds like, because it doesn't seem like Saul knows David very well when he shows up to fight Goliath. So this makes me think this is probably after David and Goliath. It is interesting. So if you're thinking about the harmful spirit, you're thinking about melancholy or depression or something like that, this is... that songs of praise, hymns of praise that David is playing, psalms actually help with that sort of thing. And that's actually true to this day. Sometimes, you know, if we're really down, sometimes it helps to have a good song, to have time to pray and time to study God's word. So we're going to take a quick pause. The children are going to rampage through here and make a ruckus. And we've got a sort of portrait in our head of what a king looks like. This is one of the interesting things where we have Jesus riding in on a donkey, and I believe it's Solomon rides in on a donkey to Jerusalem as well. But the people expect a war horse, and that does come eventually. Jesus does ride on a war horse eventually in Revelation. But in his entrance to Jerusalem, he is a lowly king. He has a crown of thorns, not a crown of jewels and gold and all these other things. Although that stuff does happen later on. It's not saying that, you know, it's necessarily bad, but God does a lot of things that are contrary to appearances. When he has the king born, you would expect the king to be born in the castle. That's why the wise men, the magi, go to the castle. But he has the king born in a stable, in a manger, in Bethlehem. He does this pretty regularly, where he'll intentionally set up something to be contrary to what you would expect for appearances' sake. So David is the youngest, he's the smallest. You would also have people like Jacob is chosen over Esau. Jacob is the younger brother of Esau. Or Joseph and his, you know, his multicolored coat or whatever is the youngest of all of his brothers until Benjamin. So God does this regularly. And it really kind of, he does it on purpose, I think, to poke at us and say, you know, I know what you think the king is going to look like, but I have better plans. So a lot, yeah. But it's interesting that God uses a lot of people that we don't expect. Saul is a great example. Saul, the one who gets converted to Paul, Saul is an enemy of God, and he's a murderer of Christians. Not only does he probably not look the part, but he doesn't act the part either. Then God converts him and uses him to a great purpose. So God sees in the heart where we can't see. We only see the outward signs, the outward deeds, but God sees in the heart. So this is one of the reasons why David is called a man after God's own heart. What was that? So David is called a man after God's own heart. God sees in the heart. This is why when Solomon is asked for any gift, he asks the correct gift. He requires he wants a discerning heart. He wants the heart to be good. So God sees the heart. We often see these appearances. So let's keep reading because we're not yet at Goliath yet. Verse 19. Therefore, Saul sent a messenger to Jesse to send me David, one of your sons who is with the sheep. Jesse took a donkey. Okay, we already did this. Let's skip forward. And when the harmful spirit of God was upon Saul, David took the lyre and played with his hand. So Saul was refreshed and it was well, and the harmful spirit departed from him. So God is using David and using the music, probably David singing. I mean, he goes on to write some of the Psalms, but if he's playing music, you know how musicians are. They tend to write songs their entire life. So he's probably already been working on some of the Psalms at this point. I imagine him singing like the Song of Moses or something after they crossed the Red Sea. I imagine those sorts of things might come up. Now, chapter 17, what we've all been waiting for. Now the Philistines gathered their armies for battle, and they were gathered at Succoth, which belongs to Judah, and encamped between Succoth and Azekah in the Ephes Damim. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and encamped in the valley of Elah and drew up a line of battle against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on the mountain on one side, and Israel stood on the mountain on the other side with a valley between them. And there came out from the camp of the Philistines a champion named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a helmet of bronze on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. And the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. And he had bronze armor on his legs and a javelin of bronze slung between his shoulders. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and the spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron. And a shield bearer went before him. He stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel.
Not used to seeing anyone taller than he is.
Yeah, so he might not be used to seeing anybody taller than he is. And this goes back to your point about judging people by appearances. Because whether Goliath is 9 feet tall, or whether Goliath is 2 feet taller than the king, or 2 inches taller than the king, he shouldn't have been judged by his appearances, and Saul should have fought him. The story is very different. Well, I mean, the story is actually the same either way, but it's more embarrassing one way than the other. If Goliath is a 9-foot tall behemoth, Saul should have known that God was strong enough to take him out. If Goliath was a 6'5" semi-behemoth, 2 inches taller than Saul, not only should Saul have known that God could have taken him out, but Saul, the warrior king, should have been willing to fight him anyway. So how much more embarrassing, how much more shameful would it have been if Goliath was basically the same height as Saul, and Saul says, "Oh, that guy over there is scary. Gee, we don't have anybody who can fight him. Oh, one of my soldiers, one of my short little soldier, well, you know, one of my shorter soldiers, would somebody else like to go fight this guy? I don't know, he's a little bit scary. This is the king. I'm totally okay with the 9-foot Goliath. I think it's really funny that, well, I don't know if it's funny. It's kind of embarrassing if Goliath is only slightly taller than Saul, but the end of the story is basically the same. Nobody but Saul should have been able to challenge this guy. If hypothetically, all of the Israelites are 5'4", and even if Goliath was only 6'5", if he's carrying around a 120-pound breastplate, the dude is strong. That's heavier than any of our military load. How much would you carry in a pack if you're going ruck? 50 pounds, maybe, plus your gear, plus everything else that you have, which is designed to be as light as possible. Maybe you get 90 pounds. That's knee-breakingly heavy. Carrying a breastplate on itself that's 120 pounds, good luck. And you got the spear, and you got the shield. Yeah, all of these things. So yeah, so for example, so if it's a 15-pound spear, the rifle, the M16, A4, whatever, M4, weighs about, what, 9 pounds, 7 pounds, with all the gear and stuff upon it. So this is heavy. All these things add up. Suffice it to say that Goliath was strong if he had these things, and he was strong if he was a champion. So he could have been 9 feet, he could have been 6 feet. It's a slightly different emphasis either way, but the point is still that that Saul's job was to fight him. Saul's job was to be the champion of the people, and if he's going to be picked out for being a big, strong guy, well, go on, big, strong guy. Go and use your big strongness. Yeah, so this, I mean, again, you're imagining David is, we imagine David is probably a young teenager. And again, this is the conditions back then where you don't have gyms and protein shakes and all this other stuff, so he's not like a gym-going teenager kind of thing. Yeah, generally, people didn't sit on the computer so much. So David was fit. He was out there. He was killing lions and tigers and bears. Wolves and stuff like that. He was able to kill them with slings and clubs and things like that. So he was competent, but in terms of the size difference, teenagers just are smaller than grown men. Especially if you're a grown man who's been carrying around heavy armor and fighting your entire life. So yeah. So this is intentionally mismatched. If you were to just look at the two contestants and you knew anything about weight classes, you would bet 100% on Goliath every single time. You would be a fool otherwise, unless you knew some sort of inside information. Let's see, what verse are we? Okay, let's keep going. All right, so Goliath is standing before them. He stood and shouted to the ranks, of Israel, "Why have you come out to draw battlements? Am I not a Philistine? Are you not servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he's able to fight me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, you shall be our servants and serve us." And the Philistine said, "I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." When Saul and Israel heard these words of the Philistines, they were dismayed and they were greatly afraid. Now David was a son of an Ephrathite, of Bethlehem in Jerusalem, named Jesse, who had 8 sons. In the day of Saul, the man was already old and advanced in years. So this is talking about Jesse, not Saul. The 3 oldest sons of Jesse had followed Saul to battle, and the names of the 3 sons who went to battle were Eliab, the firstborn, next Abinadab, and the 3rd, Shammah. David was the youngest. The 3 eldest followed Saul. But David went back and forth between Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. For 40 days, 40 days, the Philistine came forward and took his stand morning and evening. So again, this is, if I'm making a list of all the 40 days, 40 nights, 40 years, add this to the list. So 40 shows up in the flood, 40 years in the wilderness shows up when the Israelites are in the wilderness, 40 days in the wilderness when Jesus is tempted in the wilderness. So 40 is usually a time, it usually refers to a time of testing or a time of strife. All right. We'll keep going. And Jesse said to David, his son, take for your brothers an ephah of this parched grain and these 10 loaves and carry them quickly to the camp with your brothers. Also take 10 cheeses to the commander of their thousand. See if your brothers are well and bring them some token from them. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. And David rose early in the morning and left the sheep with a keeper and took provisions and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the encampment as the host was going out of the battle, shouting the war cry. And Israel and the Philistines drew up for battle, army against army, and David left the things in charge of the keeper of the baggage and ran to the ranks and went and greeted his brothers. As he talked with them, behold, the champion of the Philistines of Gath, Goliath by name, came out to the rank of the Philistines and spoke the same words before, and David heard them. Imagine he's doing this for 40 days. He just keeps pestering these guys. All the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were much afraid. And the men of Israel said, have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel. And the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches. And he will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. And David said to the men who stood by him, what shall be done for the man who kills a Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered him in the same way, so shall it be done to the man who kills him. So David is insulting this. He's calling him an animal. Who is this? Who is this filthy animal who dares speak against our God and our God's nation? Who dares speak against the people of God? So David is incensed at this. It is appropriate sometimes to get mad at blasphemy. That's really what Goliath is doing. He's not just picking fights. He's actually mocking God. Now, Eliab, his older brother, his eldest brother heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled up against David. So David's walking around saying, why doesn't somebody kill this guy, huh? Somebody needs to put this guy out of his dog. Who is this guy talking at? Somebody should kill this guy. And Eliab says, shh, would you be quiet? Why have you come down? And with whom have you left those sheep in the wilderness? I know your presumptions and the evil of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle. So he's saying, you're being a pest, and you're just coming down to see people kill each other. Then you're going to go back and play with your sheep all day. So older brother, younger brother mentality. Then David said, what have I done now? Was it not but a word? So I'm just saying someone should kill this guy. Was it not a word? And he turned away from him toward another and spoke in the same way. And the people answered him again as before. So David is pretty annoyed that nobody's killing this guy. When the words that David spoke were heard and repeated them before Saul, he sent for them. And David said, so David's going around telling, somebody should kill this guy. Hey, you know what? Somebody should kill this guy. You know, somebody should kill this Goliath guy. And eventually Saul hears, hey, somebody's talking about killing Goliath. Ooh, send him to me, quick. And sent from David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. So David says, I'll go fight with Philistine. And Saul said to David, you are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, and he has been a man of war from his youth. But David said to Saul, your servant used to keep sheep for his father, and when there came a lion or a bear and took a lamb from the flock, I went after him and struck him and delivered it out of his mouth. And if he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and I struck him and I killed him. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, for he has defied the armies of the living God. And David said, the Lord who has delivered me from the paw of the lion, from the paw of the bear, will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. Then Saul, so he's like, yeah, I'm convinced. All right, go ahead. Let's see. Let's see this. Then Saul clothed David with his armor. He put a helmet of bronze on his head and clothed him with a coat of mail. And David strapped his sword over his armor, and he tried in vain to go, for he had not tested them. And David said to Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not tested them. So David put them off, and he took his staff in his hand. Okay, so Saul tries to clothe him in the king's armor. Isn't that interesting? He wants to send David dressed up as the king to go. He's like, yeah, man, I've got all this great armor that'll probably help somebody kill him. You should wear it. And so he puts David in the king's armor basically as a sacrifice. He's like, yeah, well, I'm not going to fight him. You go ahead, but you can take my armor if you want to. And of course, so remember, Saul is bigger than all the other Israelites. And David is a youth, so he's probably smaller than all the other Israelites. So definitely doesn't fit. Yes, sir. Yes. Contrast this to later on when David sins with Bathsheba. When it starts that passage, it says, now the summer came when all the kings went to war. So David was actually following in the footsteps of Saul for a period of time too. He's supposed to be at war, and because he's not, he's at home sinning, and he sees Bathsheba, and he gets into adultery, and he gets into murder, and all these other things. Thankfully, he comes back from that. So David has the struggles of the king, but Saul embraces them and goes into his cowardice, whereas David repents from this later on, which is why he's a man after God's own heart, not because he's the perfect king, but because he's a king who repents from the sin. But yes, so much more, a stunning picture that the king who should be fighting sends David dressed as a king. All right, let's see if I can get to the end of this. He took a staff in his hand, chose five smooth stones from the brook, and put them in his shepherd's pouch. His sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistines. I heard this. I told you this. I heard this on YouTube, so you know it's true. The question was, why did he choose five stones if he knew that God was going to deliver him with one stone? You know why? Because Goliath had four brothers. That's what I heard, which is an interesting theory. It does say in the Bible that Goliath had four brothers. And if you kill somebody's brother, you might, it makes sense. Bible doesn't say it, but it's a cool little theory. I like it. I'll roll with it. Smooth stones from the brook and put them in a shepherd's pouch. His sling was in his hand. A sling would be a long piece of leather with kind of a pouch in the middle. You put a rock in it, you swing it around, you launch it. It's not a slingshot, as you see depicted often in kids' cartoons. And the Philistines it was a weapon of war. So it's their equivalent of a gun. What was that? What, the sling?
Yeah.
No. Yeah, I mean, they've been using slings for a while. And it talked about the Bethlehemites, or the Benjaminites in particular, I believe, were all left-handed for some reason. And they were the best archers in the world. It's just like a weird thing. They're like, yeah, they could like split a hair or whatever. And I think with their slings, but anyways, I'm getting distracted. The Philistines moved forward and came to David with his shield bearer in front of him. When the Philistines saw David, he disdained him. For he was but a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. And the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine said to David, come to me and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. And David said to the Philistine, you've come to me with a sword, with a spear, with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head, and I will give the dead body to the host of the Philistines, the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines, this day to the birds of the air and the beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and all the assembly may know that the Lord saves, not with a sword and with a spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand. So David puts this firmly in God's hands. David is not saying, so when David is explaining himself to Saul, he says, I've killed a bear and I've killed a lion, etc. Let me fight this guy. But when it comes down to actually fighting, he says, this battle, the glory is going to go to God and he's going to sort you out. It's not me, it's going to be God. When the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. And David put in his hand in his bag and took out a stone and slung it, and struck the Philistine in his forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell to his face on the ground. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling, with a stone, and struck the Philistine and killed him. There was no sword in the hand of David. How did David kill Goliath? What weapon did David use to kill Goliath? Okay, the next verse. Then David ran and stood over the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of his sheath and killed him and cut off his head. So what weapon did David use to kill Goliath? Goliath's sword. So this is a part, aha, see there's a contradiction, you can't be a Christian anymore. Probably what this is talking about is David struck a lethal blow to Goliath and the coup de grace was with the sword. He was dead. The guy was dying, he would have died from the sling, and David used the sword to cut off his head and finish his gurgling. But Goliath would not have recovered from the sling. That's basically easy way to understand this. Drew it out of his sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled in the middle of Israel. And Judah rose with a shout and pursued the Philistines as far as Gath, the gates of Ekron. The wounded Philistines fell on the way from Shaarim as far as Gath from Ekron. And the people of Israel came back from chasing the Philistines. They plundered their camp, and David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem. But he put his armor in his tent. Uh-oh. As soon as Saul saw David go out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, Abner, "Whose son is this youth?" And Abner said, "As your soul lives, king, I do not know." The king said, "Inquire whose son this boy is." And as soon as David returned from striking down the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistines in his hand. And Saul said to him, "Whose son are you, young man?" And David answered, "I am the son of your servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite." Thus ends the story of David and Goliath. So obviously the takeaway point is that God is in charge, or God is the one who does these great things. There's a lot of times where pastors might try to make an object lesson out of the story of David and Goliath, and they'll say that you get to be David. You're David. So just, you know, take courage and stuff. And there's something to that. But if you're looking at the story honestly, who are you in the story? You're the Israelites. You're the ones who tremble before the enemy. You're the ones who need a savior to come in and to take care of everything for you, because you just don't have the willpower to do it. You don't have the willpower to resist sin. It's not that sin is irresistible, it's just we're bad at resisting it. So this is the point of the story, is that the Savior comes in and by the power of God saves all of the Israelites who do nothing to contribute to their own salvation. So if you wanted to teach an object lesson on that, David is Jesus. Goliath is, you know, the enemy, the devil, and the world. And we are the Israelites, and we need a Savior.